Hello and welcome to the First Take Film Club podcast. I'm your host, Liam Jones, and we are back after a little short week break. This week, we are covering the amazing Oscar-winning Sound of Metal, which we're super excited about. And as ever, I am joined by my two colleagues, who are absolutely beautifully fantastic. And I'm not just saying that, I really, truly mean it. Luke Chanley and Connor Norcott. Luke, how are you, mate?
Yeah, really good, thanks, mate. Especially after that lovely intro. It really brightened my day. I mean, I wasn't having a bad day, but now I have an even better day. I'm on like my... I was supposed to be working today. And I woke up this morning, like, exhausted, because I worked yesterday and the day before quite long. And I just woke up and was like... I'm just putting the whole day off until tomorrow. So, so I'm doing pretty good. I'm having a chilled one. Thanks. How about you, mate?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm so great. I'm so great. I'm tired, though. I'm really tired. But I was up all night trying to do a video application for a job. And it was just, it was something. I've not done something like that in so long. So it was like, oh, it was a bit of a struggle. So I'm good but tired. Anyway, Connor, how are you, mate?
I think we're all good but tired this week. Although, you know what? I was super pumped for this, and then I realised, like, I went to work. I did, like, a big day yesterday at work, and I left the slow cooker on, and I made a curry when I got in. Well, I made a curry for when I got in, and my flat still smells like it, and it's kind of wigging me out a bit. I'm kind of hungry. I'm kind of like, I can't believe I ate a full curry last night to myself. But apart from that, I'm also pretty good and also very, very tired. But this is my day off, and what better way to spend it than with you boys for
so
all of an
you
hour.
You ate a full slow cooker pot full of curry.
I had a rough day yesterday.
Bro, you've only got a small tummy as well, man.
I know, man, I know.
You don't eat much.
I know. But you know what? Here I am.
Well, yeah, you know, at least you've not, you know.
At least I'm eating.
Yeah. At least I'm eating. You could probably expect probably quite a big, you know, number two.
I know what you're getting at.
A curry poo.
As soon as you started that sentence, I knew exactly where you were going, and I was like, I'm not sure this is a good idea, but I'm not going to interrupt. I'll see where it goes.
Enough with the poo chat. So usually we like to open with an opening question. And today, as Sound of Metal, it is quite a moving film, I think we'd all agree. And what I want to know is, when was the last time that you were truly moved by a film, excluding Sound of Metal? Sorry, I'll throw it to you first, Luke.
Good question. I think that's quite hard. Because I can't think, because during the pandemic, I've like exclusively avoided moving anything that portrays any form of emotion. I imagine maybe, what films have we done? No, because Palm Springs wasn't particularly moving, was it? Like, it was nice, but it wasn't moving.
Mm-hmm.
That's really hard. Whether it was like Toy Story 4, yeah, the last time I was moved by a movie, not a new movie, was probably like last week in Toy Story 4. I just think the ending of that film is amazing. But even then, that just reflects like what I've been watching during the whole pandemic. It's just like things that I've seen loads before, or like things that we watch for the podcast. So I'll say Toy Story 4, but I'd really wish I could remember the last time I was moved by something I hadn't seen before, which I'm afraid I can't remember, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to give my answer now, but I think mine might be the same as Connor's. So I'm going to let Connor go first.
I know what we're talking about here, and that film will come up when you give the answer. It was that until I watched a documentary the other day by a guy called Garrett Bradley, and it's called Time. It was one of the Oscar nominated documentaries this year. And that just fucked my whole life up. And I'm already on like a 50-hour week, and I've got two uni deadlines. And all I'm thinking about is like, it doesn't really matter, does it, in the grand scheme of things? The film is so powerful, and it kind of reframes your perspective on like the things that you find important, I think, anyway. And it's free to watch now on YouTube. It was on Amazon Prime, and I think they've made it free to watch on YouTube, so I'd recommend that to anyone. even if you do fancy a little cry, I'd probably check that out.
What's funny is that it was actually beat at the Oscars by a documentary on Netflix called My Octopus Teacher. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but I watched it last week when I was drunk, and I really, really, really liked it. A guy befriends an octopus, and they just have a bit of a weird connection slash relationship. You know, it's like The Shape of Water in real life, you know.
I hope not.
White. He doesn't yeah. quite fuck the fish in this one. But no, it's a really good documentary. For me, I know Connor felt quite the same about this film, is The Father, which Anthony Hopkins won the Oscar for, which was great. But honestly, it's such a heart-wrenching film. Properly heart-wrenching. And the last 10 minutes, I'm not going to spoil it, but the last 10 minutes will probably make you want to cry a lot. It will rip your heart out. And, you know, I think there was a lot of controversy about Hopkins winning that Oscar, but I don't know, I think he fully deserved it. That performance was crazy. It was crazy good, 83 years old, and he's pulling out performances like that. It absolutely blew me away. And yeah, I did have a proper little cry. Also, I rewatched A Star Is Born for like the fifth time of the day, the Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper one, and man, that makes me cry.
Yeah. Really?
That's yeah, moving. That makes... Oh man, it's moving. It's moving.
So nice. So you can't say that it's that whole from when he kills himself to then the end when she's doing that song, and when it cuts, you know, when it cuts.
The cut's good.
Singing. And then to him singing on the piano when he's first writing that song, that was great. He should have won. He should have got best director for that. Anywho, I'm sure. Have we all given our answers now? Are we all happy with them?
Yeah,
fantastic. So today's film is, as I said before, the Oscar-winning Sound of Metal. I will just do a quick summary of this film. It's actually quite a straightforward plot, really. I think me and Luke were speaking before off air that it might have been something different, but no, it's quite simple. A heavy metal drummer's life is thrown into freefall when he begins to lose his hearing. And really, that's all you need to know. And that kind of premise is kind of established within the first 5 minutes, really, that this is something that's going to happen. And I think it was first takes for all of us, obviously, right? Because it's a brand new film.
Yeah,
and I'll just go straight in for what I thought of this film when I first watched it. I watched some of it again last night, and honestly, it really blew me away, and it was unexpected as well. I didn't expect it to go the way it did, and I think it's quite a poignant film in terms of, you know, the depiction of the deaf community. I think it's quite important and. Really quite a valuable film to obviously the deaf community, but I think it's valuable to us as well, because I think it teaches us something. I think, you know, where be it some of the sign language used in the film or what it actually sounds like to lose 80% of your hearing, or what it sounds like to have implants in your head. I think, you know, that the sound design of this film is incredible. It really, I don't know, for me I can't think of a time watching a film where the sound has genuinely on its own kind of sucked me in and made me kind of see through the eyes of the main character. And I think like that is why this film for me, like, it totally blew me away. So yeah, first take for me was I was quite emotional near the end as well, and really just quite impressed. And it's almost a sense of sadness, but then there's this weird kind of cathartic ending that you kind of feel happy for the main character, for Riz Ahmed's character as well. So I think there's so many different elements here, but ultimately it really works for me. I think it's a beautifully made film. Connor, what was your first take?
I think, yeah, I would echo most of that. The only thing, it didn't really, at once, I say I'm not that big into crying at films, but I really am. But this film didn't really emotionally hit me until the final shot, which I think is so good. And apart from that, there were some moments that I didn't really enjoy on a first watch, and I've watched it again since because we did it for the podcast. And there's bits that I kind of maybe feel a bit more forgiven about that we'll hopefully get onto later on. But overall, the big standout for me that isn't the sound design is kind of is Riz Ahmed's performance, which I didn't think I caught onto on the first watch, but the second watch really cemented it. He does so much without physically or even just with his eyes that you're just kind of like, oh my god, this guy. It's almost like a silent movie. There's so much conveyed through body language and facial expression, and that's something you get to really appreciate when you kind of you're already aware of the plot that's happened already. But on a first take, I think I really enjoyed it, but I have some things I want to talk about later on.
How about you, Luke?
Yeah, fair. That's quite a couple of good summaries there. I quite like it when we all have first takes, and because we've been so busy this week, we haven't like a lot of our texts have kind of just been put in the group, and then we've all like looked at them and then just gone away and done our thing, and we haven't like discussed the film, which is quite cool. Mm-hmm. I think I like kind of share a couple of things from both your descriptions. I really liked the film, and there was to maybe echo more what Liam said, I was quite moved a fair bit in the film, especially at the beginning, as he like loses his hearing quite rapidly. And I suppose he's coming to terms with that, but then you're also learning that he's a recovering addict. And that's just like a bit of a gut punch, because you kind of think, well, someone's already struggling from something, like they're trying the hardest to keep at bay. And then I suppose their livelihood, or at least their main hobby, has been taken away, essentially. How are they going to deal with that? And it all becomes a bit of a gut punch, I think. But like, I really enjoyed that. And as the film, I think the film, one thing I would say is that I don't know if it's a negative, but it definitely was unusual. I actually kind of think the way the film, the arc of the film was quite weird. Like, I think it took the things that you maybe would expect to happen in like a normal film or usually in a film, didn't really.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't that. I think where you have a film, don't you have like an up and then a down, and they take the up a bit again, then something happens. Like, but it didn't really feel like that. You know, there was, I don't know, it's quite hard to describe, and maybe it'll be easier to describe as we actually start talking about the plot a bit. But I thought it took some unusual choices, which I maybe on first watch felt a bit unusual or uneven. Mm-hmm. But the whole film in general, like the bits that moved me the most were that when he was, and we, obviously we'll probably talk about it later, so I won't touch on it too much, but when he was started integrating himself with the deaf community of the rehabilitation, well, the rehabilitation stroke deaf community that he'd moved into, and he went from being someone who obviously quite wished he had his hearing back to learning sign, talking with sign, bonding with some of the people, the teachers or the little children. They like that moved me because I think I was quite invested in the character. I liked where the character had come from to go deaf. Like, I think it was, I don't know, I just really liked it. Mm-hmm. And then from seeing him be so gutted to like finding like a little bit of happiness, I think that's what got me the most. Like the sad stuff, obviously, that losing hearing is sad. And the quite intense conversations with his girlfriend were sad at the beginning. But when he started to find a bit of happiness was the bit that like made me almost kind of cry with happiness. Like, I didn't cry properly, but definitely like welled up. Mm-hmm. But I suppose my summary, I've been going on for about 5 minutes here. My summary, I suppose, is that I did like it. It took some unusual turns that I don't know how I feel about on first watch. But generally, I'm just like quite made up that, like, it's just a good film, and I'm quite made up that there's a good film out there that represents probably like maybe one of the most underrepresented communities of people in the world, really, in terms of disabilities. Mm-hmm. Because I think when we think of disabilities, we think of maybe, I suppose it is a physical impairment, but more obvious physical impairments where you can actually see on first hand the person's disabled. I think that's what people maybe fairly automatically think. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to have a movie where maybe all isn't as it seems. But yeah, I really liked it. I did like it. Mm-hmm. I think I'm in between Connor and Liam in terms of loving it and being a bit uncertain. So I'd say slap bang in the middle.
So the film kind of opens with Ruben, played by Riz Ahmed, and Luke, played by Olivia Cooke. They're a couple. They're both recovering addicts, and they're also a rock duo, you know, which for me, it was kind of the perfect thing for them. It was like the only thing they could do, really, in the sense that, you know, they are recovering addicts, and, you know, it's almost like a catharsis, you know, for this screamo. She's screaming in her songs and he's whacking away at the drums, you know, and I don't know. I just want to know from you guys, with that opening, you know, where did you think it was going to go? Connor, I'll go to you first. Like, with that opening, where did you think it was going to go? Because for me, I didn't expect it to go the route that it did in the end.
Yeah, I think we spoke a little before we started recording about that we all kind of felt there'd be more musicality in the film, or maybe it would be more about his music career. And especially when you look at the runtime of it, like a just over 2 hour film, he kind of loses his hearing in the first 10 minutes, or it begins to go within the first 10 minutes. But it opens with this kind of horrible, sweaty, downstairs kind of basement vibe gig. And it opens with these really guttural drums and guttural screaming from Lou. And I was like, yeah, I'm in, sold, done. I want to see this. I want to watch all of this. I wanted a bit more of that, if I'm honest. And I'm glad we didn't get it, because ultimately I think it serves the narrative a bit more. But I could have watched an extra, like, maybe 10 minutes of outtakes of them fucking around playing music, because I think it comes back to the expressionistic thing in the film. And maybe this is something that we'll talk on later that you mentioned, Luke, with the kind of art being different. There's so much that you are able to communicate physically. And I think it's one of those films that if you were to keep going back and watching it, you'll see a complete different character from where Ruben starts off, just in terms of his physicality. Obviously, he's playing the drums, to where he ends up. And that's even echoed in his haircut when he shaves his head or whatever, obviously, for the operation. I think the opening, most good films have a really good opening that hooks you. And this one had me within, like, the first, you know, line of the drums, whatever I was fully in. What about you?
I was just going to say, I think quite a lot of people must have felt that it was going to be more about the music, because the poster is Riz Ahmed, you know, with on the drums.
Yeah.
So I think probably I imagine it was, you know, a clearly quite a meaningful choice, because they wanted to maybe not make us think, oh, it's going to be about music, but I guess they wanted to, they didn't want us to think, oh, it's going to be a film about a guy going through the deaf community and spending most of his time there trying to learn how to be deaf. And I don't know, I just think, but I fully expected it to be more like about how he was, I thought it was going to be about a drummer who loses his hearing and how he's going to make it in the music industry without, you know, without his hearing. You know, that's actually what I thought it was going to be, because I didn't watch a trailer for this or anything. I wasn't really aware of what it was about, other than a drummer, you know, loses his hearing. Luke, what about you?
Yeah, totally agree. When you say Liam, I imagine, you know, a lot of people, I mean, I didn't really see the trailer. I imagine a lot of people may feel the same way. I think how I feel is really weird, because you agree with Connor completely. And what we were talking before, and obviously these completely different films, but it really reminded me of the beginning of A Star Is Born, when he comes out on stage. And then weirdly enough, he comes out on stage and you discover quite quickly that he's got hearing problems as well, which is quite a weird link, which obviously there's no actual link there, just a coincidence. But it's a live music element that kind of gets, because I think when in movies, when live music is done well, it looks fucking amazing. And when it's done badly, it looks absolute shite.
Yeah.
So they did it really well. And like Connor said, it really, really hooked me. What I find is weird is I'm actually quite happy with the way the film went in terms of not addressing much to do with the music element of his life. But also I would wish that was, like, I'd love there to be like a parallel movie where it did address some more of the music, almost, or like almost like a parallel dimension, I suppose, if you want to be weird. But like, yeah, the beginning was great, and I loved the interaction between Lou and Ruben, and finding out that they were both addicts and he loses, it kind of made me really anxious for what was to come. And I actually kind of think, just moving on slightly towards, like, let's say the middle and the end of the film, there's actually nothing to be in that respect, because I was thinking, are they going to hurt themselves? Are they going to relapse? Is it, you know, is it going to get really, really gritty? But I actually think there's actually nothing to worry about, because it doesn't really go them places, does it really? It's more about relationships and the hearing. So yeah, in terms of the beginning, I've got nothing spectacular to say other than like it did hook me, and that was probably quite helpful, because yeah, I don't know how hooked I would have been without that.
Just to jump in there then, because I think I haven't made a lot of notes, but one of the main things that really stood out to me, and even on a first watch, and once again this comes back to the arc of the film, that I think it all kind of works in harmony here. What I think this film does, not best, because best is clearly sound design and editing, which it won Oscars for, but my favorite part of the film is how everyone in the film, not just in terms of production, but also performance, and even the film itself, just shows complete control and restraint, and it never goes into melodrama. It doesn't go for that, the relapse, the self-harm, the self-loathing. It just lets you kind of, I think it's kind of why the middle part and the community feels so special and harmonious and correct, because it's not about any of that. It's all just restorative. It's all kind of building you back up and kind of reframing your perspective, and also understanding that you might have lost your hearing, but you're not lost. You're still you. You know what I mean? And that's one of the things that when we talk about maybe Brett to break out the cryometer, I didn't cry with this film. But that's the bit, the emotional resonance was with those scenes, with that community, and it's all because of the restraint.
I think, you know, the writer-director, Darius Marder, I think the fact that he put in so much work and research, you know, him and Riz Ahmed, in terms of, you know, learning the drums and then learning how to sign and learning about the deaf community, you know, when you put that much research in, I think you can't go down the melodrama route, and you can't be exploitative. And, you know, for me, I think, you know, sometimes when people, when films introduce mental illness and self-harm, I think sometimes they're not eager, but they're kind of like anxious to go back there further down in the film. You know, there's a relapse and what have you. But I think what this film does is it respects, you know, the addicts, and it respects people who self-harm and people who are recovering from doing things like that, you know, in the sense that, okay, yeah, when we first see Lou in the trailer, you see her, the scars on her arm when she's lying in bed, but, you know, Ruben explains about her scratching as a kind of thing where she feels like she might need to self-harm and whatever, but, you know, that's it. It's not, you know, you don't see her do anything.
Yeah, it's spoken about. It's not ever like graphic or gratuitous. It's kind of just part of the foundation of the character. And because it's a character study, they don't need to delve into it, because even with the poster, you know, it sets him up. He's a drummer in Sound of Metal. He's a metal drummer, cool. But by the end of the film, Sound of Metal means something totally different. And that's kind of because his perspective and his life is being reframed that way.
And I think Luke, I just wanted
to say, go ahead, mate.
I think what's interesting as well is, you know, addictive kind of traits to us, you know, not like, I guess, non-addicts, is, I guess, maybe hard to notice, but it's really interesting. And Paul Racy, by the way, who plays Joe, who is kind of the leader of the deaf community, he's fantastic. He was the actor Paul Racy, he's a hearing person raised by both deaf parents. So he's obviously consign and what have you, and he's very ingrained in the deaf community. And I think it's perfect casting, really, to cast him in this role. But anyway, further on in the film, when Ruben decides to get these implants, but then he comes back to Joe and he asks for money, and Joe says, "Ruben, you're acting and you're behaving like an addict." And that I didn't pick up on that. I didn't pick up on it. It was addictive behavior. I picked up on it. Maybe it was desperate behavior, but from an addict's perspective, talking to an addict, just acting like that, desperate for, he wasn't asking for money for drugs. He wanted money so he could buy a van back. And for me, that didn't resonate with me as being kind of traits of addiction. So I just think that's interesting as well. Like, you do get these little subtle things where, they clearly have done their research. What is an addictive trait to us? Sorry, what isn't an addictive trait to us is an addictive trait to someone who is an addict and can recognize it far more easily. And I think, something like that, it just makes this film feel far more kind of important, because I think you respect the work that's gone into it. It's so well made.
This isn't something I've thought of necessarily before, like while I was watching it before, but just as we've been talking, mainly in like the intros, and when I was discussing like the arc, I suppose, with the movie, what usually happens in films is that, for drama, something quite unrealistic will happen. Everything in this film, all the choices that are made, are actually quite realistic choices. So when I say that, what I mean is, so let's say, he's trying to, he goes into this deaf community, and yeah, he starts off as a newcomer and almost like a someone who's alone in the community, and you can see, and that's actually, it's actually pretty distressing, I think. Like, the bit where he is, like, he's surrounded by these people who are really in the community, and he can't understand them at all, literally, and he's obviously thinking, this is a bit shit, isn't it? Because he just can't do anything. But then it from then that he comes ingrained, he learns sign and really builds these relationships. But actually, the realistic choice, which he does later, is still, he has his eyes set on getting his hearing back. Because essentially, if you don't come from that community and you haven't learned to live with deafness, not as a disability, as they say, but as like something that you've got to deal with, then the realistic thing, if you're given £40,000 to have an implant, is you're going to get the implant. Because, so, and I think that is a realistic choice. And I imagine that's the choice that I would make if I it happened to me now. And then if for some reason I had 40 grand by selling all my gear, I wouldn't then go, "Oh, but I've made loads of friends." I'd go, "Well, I'm going to go and get this implant." But, and that avenue doesn't serve for drama. And I suppose, actually, thinking about it, that's actually quite an impressive avenue to take. Because, yeah, they could have easily had a thing where the last shot was him standing on the doorway of the deaf community and accepting a job, and then it had almost gone naturally from, you've got the upward curve, the downward where he makes a mistake and gets ostracized, and then at the end he becomes to like rejuvenate his relationships. That would almost be the movie way of doing that storyline. But that's not what happens, and you don't, as soon as he's ostracized, you don't see that community. And I respect two things, and this has only come from us talking. I respect that as not building drama where drama isn't needed, because actually someone losing their hearing and being an addict is more than enough drama for one day. But also respecting that, like, my initial thought was probably disrespectfully, "Oh, this person's an addict, so as soon as they have a setback, they're just going to do their addiction again," which probably isn't the case, because these people learn how to not do that. And I respect the fact that actually just doesn't. Yeah, he may express addictive behaviors in, "Oh, well, if you give me 26 grand, I can get my thing back." And so it's almost like gambling behavior. But I made up that actually, like, he does just go, "Oh, you know what? Forget it. It's fine," and then moves away from it. It always respects these people who are addicts and have been recovering addicts for however long.
And I think when, I don't know if this was actually part of the recording or if it was off air, when we said, like, it's not a, we said it's kind of a simple film, but it's not a film that's just about deafness, and it's not just for deaf audiences. It's not a film about deafness really at all. It's kind of about identity and realizing who you are. And once again, when your perspective changes and you have to kind of figure out who you've become now. And I watched a film that Riz Ahmed, I think he might have written, directed and starred in it, called Mogul Mowgli, which is about like a British hip hop artist or something. And he's once again incredible, and it's a very physical and musical performance. But it seems to me that kind of realization of identity is kind of a theme that he seems to be kind of going for in his career. And in this film, the decision to not, all like you said, all the decisions are made correctly. And the decision actually to not go back to the community is one where you're like, oh, okay, that's a bit subvert, like it's a bit of subversion there. So when you get that final shot and him taking the implants out, or the hearing aid or whatever out, and taking his hat off, and he's just standing there, and it's a close up of his face, and it lingers a little bit too long, because it's like, oh, you need to realize what he's thinking about. That's really good filmmaking, and that's something that I think we should kind of talk about the filmmaking a little bit later on, because for a first time feature director, I think, in Darius Marder, to show this level of restraint and control of the screen, and not just the, and you know, the, obviously the sound design and the editing and the performances, is a real achievement. And I feel like this film didn't get talked about enough in terms of direction and filmmaking, rather just sound design and editing. And it deserves a little bit of praise for that too, I think. But we can get on to that later.
So I'm quite aware that we've not properly touched on the plot. So, but what I want to do quickly is kind of do a little fast forward through, because it's kind of quite segmented in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the rock star opening, and then he loses his hearing, and then he goes to the deaf community, tries to integrate himself there. Then he rejects the deaf community, you know, by going to get his implants. Then he comes back to the deaf community and asks for some money so he can get his RV and go, because he thinks he can maybe drum again with his girlfriend. Turns out he can't. And then he goes to Paris to see his girlfriend, where kind of things are a little different now. And, you know, Lou's eyebrows aren't blonde anymore. They're now brown.
Character development.
Yeah. And she's had a haircut, and she's living with her father, who she's had, you know, a difficult relationship with, but, you know, she's doing well for herself. And I think, and then obviously what you said, Connor, it kind of goes that is the end. And then it goes from that to Ruben realizing that maybe he isn't right for Lou right now. And I'll tell you what, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but this to me was like brilliant, brilliant filmmaking. And he says when they first, you know, come back together, whatever, in Paris, and mm-hmm. he says to her, oh, you've stopped scratching your arms. And, you know, that's like one of her kind of self-harm things that she would do. And that's what he says, oh, you've stopped. And she's like, oh, yeah, I guess I have. And, you know, they spend the night together, and, you know, when they're lying in bed, she starts scratching her arm again. And it's like, okay, maybe he isn't, you know, right for her anymore. And I think he realizes that as well. And I think, like, it's almost a stepping stone for him, because, you know, we saw earlier on in the film how much it absolutely broke his heart to leave his girlfriend Lou. You know, he was literally, you could see him like aching. And, you know, in that moment, I think he's like grew a lot in the last 5 minutes. You know, he's grew so much. He realizes, you know, that he's not maybe right for his girlfriend. Maybe she, you know, they're not right for each other. Maybe right now, who knows, in the future, but right now they're not. And then he decides to kind of reject this implant that he's just spent £40,000 on, and dollars or whatever. And I'm pretty sure that when he takes it off, his hearing is at 0%, right? I think that's what they had to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's almost like, you know, he's now completely, fully deaf. You know, he's now fully integrated into the deaf community because he has absolutely zero hearing. And I think what makes you kind of appreciate it more, appreciate his choice near the end is, you know, the incredible sound design of making us hear what it sounds like to hear with implants, which is weird, staticky, quite uncomfortable. And it's okay if it's just one person speaking in a room, but, you know, when he's walking through Paris, it's really,
I love that.
Yeah, it's really uncomfortable. And then I think it's an absolute genius choice to have the bells of the church tower in the background ringing, and we're hearing it through these implants, and it was making me wince, you know, because I was feeling for him more than anything. Like, he's having to hear this, and it's so kind of, but it's such an uncomfortable sound, you know, and this can't be easy, you know. And obviously there are people that have implants, and I'm sure that they you know, they live with them fine. I guess you learn how to cope with, you know, that type of frequency. But God, I was so relieved when he did take them off, because I think that's what they're trying to do, isn't it? Because that the church bell, it's so uncomfortable and it's so loud that when he takes it off, it's that silence is bliss for us and for him. You know, and I think that is kind of, for me, that ending really moved me. So yeah, I've just kind of skipped through the plot a little bit there, just to touch on some things a little quickly before we forget about all of that stuff. I don't know if you guys have anything to add in terms of what you liked about the plot moving, you know, from start to finish. Connor, you look like you're thinking about something. I'll get to you, mate.
I was hoping you wouldn't do that. You know what I do really like about it, and I'm running on this restrained thing, but it doesn't ever feel like those peaks and kind of low points like Luke talked about. And normally that would be because it's quite a well-paced film, and that would make me think of something like Uncut Gems, which is frantic and energetic and overwhelming and disorienting. But this is all really kind of, it's almost like a French New Wave. It's really kind of relaxed in terms of its pacing. The subject matter isn't, but what I really appreciate is kind of how it's a 2-hour film, yeah, and I think it might be a little bit too long. We might be able to talk about that if we've got time. But it does just kind of guide you through this moment, and it's in Ruben's life, and it's not really like a big end of the world. This is him, and this is who it's going to be, or it's life or death. It's not really about that. It's kind of just this portion of his life, these couple of months or however long it's set, and the change in him as a man. And I really enjoyed that, and I like those self-contained films, and it's really refreshing to see films like that get, you know, big spotlight moments. I mean, not just being covered on First Take Film Club, also getting Oscar nominations is quite nice. And I don't know, I just think that's something I really enjoyed. And the kind of middle section of the film, normally films are broken up into the three act structure, the second, you know, the second third, if you will. It's quite long, but it's also probably my favorite part of the film, because it's so filled with it's not completely joyous, but it's also kind of full of discovery. And it's not just of the community, but of himself and how he fits in with that community and the community represent, and not just addicts or reformed addicts, but also the deaf community as well as a whole. I think it's really well done, and it's also really heartwarming and really endearing. And that's where Riz Ahmed stands out for me the most.
I just agree. The middle third for me is like, it's the not the most fun, but just like the most enjoyable. Like this guy's getting, like, you know, he's still struggling, but he's getting things out of his situation a bit. And yeah, like, you know, maybe that's just, I struggle with negativity, or like constant negativity. So like, I loved Uncut Gems, but also at the same time, like, it was like a battering ram every second to you, wasn't it? And that, you know, and as an experience, especially in the cinema, that was sick. That was really good. But at home, I find it a bit different, really. And I just didn't want to be battered with like quite aggressively depressing details. So the middle third, where it, like you say, it was about discovery, and there were still hard bits where he was told to go in the room on his own, sit down, do nothing, and when he couldn't do nothing, just write. And that was obviously a little bit like, that's more difficult. But like you say, with the scene where he's going to the school, and the kids are kind of like laughing a bit at him because he doesn't know any of the details of sign, and the teacher says like, "Oh, come on, you know, don't, you know, we'll show him how to do it and whatever. And then the development of that, I think it's just like quite lovely. Like it's really sad in like a, oh, it's sad that he's lost his hearing, but it's just like the start, it's the beginning of his new life. Mm-hmm. And it's just really, I just found that really nice and like really interesting and intriguing. Yeah, I just, and set, last point on anything for me from the plot, but it's not plot, but Riz Ahmed is fucking amazing. Like, he's just brilliant, isn't he? Like an absolute treasure. And I'm glad he was in this film, because he just, honestly, he just pitched it so perfectly. Like you said about with, yeah, obviously a lot of it's to do with hearing and sounds, but the things he did when he wasn't speaking are just absolutely,
yeah,
one, like, brilliant, really, really good.
Completely agree.
I just want to touch on that middle third bit again, because I think there is quite, there's joyous moments in there. And, you know, I think it is really heartwarming to see Ruben when he's teaching the kids the drums, you know, and they're all laughing, and, you know, to see him, you know, signing when, or you know, near the start of the film, he almost seemed quite hopeless and felt like he, you know, might have, you know, completely rejected, you know, what they wanted to teach him, you know, in terms of sign language and integrating into the community. But it's that middle third, it really earns, I think it earns our respect for him, you know, mm-hmm. and it earns our respect for everyone in that community as well, because, you know, they're so welcoming and helpful. And I don't know about you, right? Maybe I'm wrong here, but I did think there was a little bit of sexual tension between Ruben and the teacher of the school. There was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of eye contact between the two of them, a lot of glances, you know. Mm. And I thought they were going to go down that route at one point. Maybe he was going to find love in her, and then that was going to be, you know, him accepting, you know, fully accepting, you know, his deafness by getting with someone who's also deaf. Luke?
No, yeah, that is literally what I thought. And I wonder whether it's just really quickly, the only way that these people can communicate, feel like they can probably catch attention is through the eyes. So whereas we see that as sexual tension, that could very easily be.
There could be something in there.
Yeah, almost, you know, the intensity isn't in the sound, it's in like the expressions. So that could easily, I mean, and probably was, because nothing, like literally nothing came of it, was probably more to do with expressing something that they can't with their voice, maybe.
It's a good idea, that, yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I'm just being... No, but I totally agree, and maybe that was purposeful. But I thought, because what I actually thought was, well, this is weird if there's a Lou and then there's also this tea, you know. So I totally agree, just in terms of choices being made and the fact that literally nothing came of that at all, feels like it could be a purposeful thing.
I think maybe we're right. Who knows? You know. Connor, I know you wanted to touch on some of the technical aspects of this film a little bit more. You know, we spoke a little bit about the sound and a little bit about the directing. Mm-hmm. But what is it that you want to touch on?
So I think we've only got a couple of minutes here, so I won't bore everyone with all my technical talk. Connor's technical corner won't be too long this week. I watched an interview with I remember the second name. His second name is Becker. I'm guessing it might
be Boris.
Not Boris, maybe Max Becker. I should know his name. I'm really sorry. He was the sound designer for this film. And he was kind of talking about how he kind of made the sound so not just visual, but visceral and so kind of engaging for audiences. And he did this thing where he kind of likened it to cinematography, where you do like a pull focus. So your focus changes from what's in the foreground to what's in the background or whatever. And he did this with sound, with having like 10 or so different mics, all recording scenes like at the same time, but at all different lengths, all different types of mics. Some were even kind of placed inside the mouths of actors to kind of get that almost, the only way I can describe it is, you know, that feeling when you're in a bath and you go underwater and you can kind of hear you can almost feel the vibration of your voice or whatever else other sound you're hearing. It's kind of to kind of get that almost internal audio. I find that really interesting. And I think that's one of the things, that's kind of how the film accomplishes these reframes, perspectives, is by constantly moving you from one kind of area of audio and one area of sound into the other one. The big thing for me that showcases this is when he first starts to lose his hearing after the gig, you can kind of hear what he's saying, or you can, and not just because you're focusing on him. Mm-hmm. He's such a handsome guy with great hair as well. And you can see him lip read it, or you can lip read what he's saying. But also, he has only lost 80% of his hearing. And in the interview with the sound designer, he mentioned that, you know, when you start to lose your hearing, you don't lose everything all at once. You kind of lose the different pitches and tempos. And that's kind of how he tried to structure the audio edit, and where some things were dialed down incrementally. So you've got the feeling of gradual loss in the conversation. And then when I watched it the second time around this morning, that was really, really hard to watch, because now that I know that's what they were doing, it makes it so much more impactful. And there's these little things that you might not, obviously you'd have to know the interview to know what he's doing, but you can even just hear it and see it in the film. And I think that's why, you know, that's why it's so deserving of the Oscar for not just best film editing, but best sound design. And yeah, he did a good job. Big up.
I think as well with the sound design, there were moments on second watch at the start when it's when just before he loses his hearing complete, well, 80% of his hearing, and him and Lou, they're driving in the RV, but it's kind of like it's a shot, like a tracking shot of the RV going on their journey. But in the background, you hear this almost like ringing as they're having this conversation. And it's only on second watch that you realize that this is probably, you know, what he's hearing, you know, this ringing. I think it's quite apparent, isn't it, when we're not hearing from his perspective. It's almost like a camera flip, isn't there? You know, where it flips perspective. So then you're made aware that, okay, this isn't from Ruben's point of view. This is from the fly on the wall's point of view, or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, obviously props to the sound designer and props to the director as well, because they have to work together to make it work. You know, they have to be cues to understand where the sound is coming from when when your film is so involved with sound, with in particular one person's hearing. Then I think, you know, the connection between the sound designer and the director has to be tight. And then that again comes in with the editing that won the Oscar. It has to all come together perfectly. You know, it must have been such an arduous task to, you know, together to work so they absolutely nail it. I don't know if you guys have anything else to add now. I know that we're pushing for time. I don't know if we just want to go straight into popcorns.
Can I mention one brief thing that is probably my favorite part of the movie that isn't just the weird play on Sound of Metal and what it means at the end? That's kind of cool. I really like the scene, the first scene that you get of them in the RV when he's kind of making breakfast and doing a squat, and he's listening to those little tunes and they have a nice dance. And it was really sunny the day I watched it, and I was like, oh man, I'm going to get myself a little smoothie maker, because I just felt like I want to be this guy. I might dye my hair blonde. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. We can go on popcorn now if you want.
Right. I'm going to just throw out my popcorns first. For me, on first watch, it's a solid 85 popcorns for me. I was impressed and like blown away at the same time. And the performances are great, and technically it's brilliant as well. So I think like 85 is fair for in my point of view. Luke, what about you, mate?
I'm going 76. I kind of always feel like films should be higher when I like them this much, but I'm trying to rein in my popcorn giving. But I just think like 7 out of 10 on first watch is just, it's fair. Like it was really good, and I did enjoy it. Sometime I'll watch it again. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel very similar, and I'd probably give it 70. I'll give it 75 just to not copy too much. I do have some issues with it that we didn't talk about, and quickly, they are mostly to do with the length of the film. But I could kind of, you could kind of argue that that is also intentional. So fair enough. I don't know what it is. It just kind of didn't hit me as hard as some of the other big boys that I watched for the Oscar season. Hopefully we'll cover it some other time, but with this film being, you know, free to watch on Amazon Prime, if you have the subscription, it's more than worth it. And it's only 2 hours long. So knock yourselves out.
Sorry, quickly, did you think it was too long then, or too short, or what?
I think it's maybe 10 minutes too long.
Oh, I for me, I didn't get that for me, but I suppose maybe the middle third could be chopped down a little bit, I guess. But I think the beginning and the end, I think the first and the last third, I think they're the perfect length for me. I think they tell the right amount of story. I think if anything, maybe the middle third might be able to trim just a little bit off, but I don't know, for me it was a great length. Anyway, that's that. Sound of Metal, boxed off, done. We haven't actually discussed what we're doing next week, but we'll have a little chat off air and we'll tweet it out. I'm sure we might have something interesting coming your way next week, which should be fun. So yeah, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at First Take Pod. We know that you love our interactions on Twitter. I had a nice little Oscars night the other night, tweeting, live tweeting off of the Twitter account, and I really enjoyed it. And I want to do more things like that. So just keep your eyes peeled for some really cool and fun interactions on Twitter. Not Instagram from me, that's not my shtick. I'll leave that up to Luke and Connor. But no, Twitter definitely I will be on and interacting with you guys, which will be super fun. So all that's left to say is thank you very much for listening. And we'll hopefully see you next week.